Welcome in, podcast listeners. We have got an absolutely loaded podcast for you. Lots of good stuff here. Shannon Spake, Will Cain, usually, as he joins us every single Wednesday, and the governor of the state of Tennessee, Bill Lee, arguing for the opening back up of sporting events and states and cities and communities as well. I think you guys are going to love all of it. We're talking Aaron Rodgers drama, NFL Rookie of the Year odds, and also Cam Newton and Jimmy G in particular. What are their futures? Lots to dive into here. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. The podcast begins now. The show is live from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on Friday. We will have Danny G giving you a bunch of five-star reviews, so make sure, if you haven't already, that you're there to hang out and watch and give us those five-star reviews. Podcast begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We are diving into a lot of different stories here, but we continue to kind of unpack what happened in the NFL draft. And in particular, the Aaron Rodgers drama is still out there. And I don't know, maybe a good idea, Aaron Rodgers clock or Aaron Rodgers chart, to see how many days in a row we are going to mention Aaron Rodgers. Before that, it was Deshaun Watson when he demanded a trade. But we don't have the NBA playoffs or the NHL playoffs still starting for another couple of weeks. So I think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to be talking a lot of Aaron Rodgers every single day as we go. But I'll talk a little bit more Aaron Rodgers later in the show and how I think everything is going to work out with Green Bay's quarterback situation. Spoiler alert, I think he's going to go to Denver. But there are interesting odds out about Rookie of the Year. In particular, of the quarterbacks, they are the five favorites to win NFL Rookie of the Year at FanDuel. And as I was looking through here, I was trying to figure out, hey, where are the best value plays right now as it pertains to NFL Rookies of the Year? And to me, I think if you break it all down, Trevor Lawrence is a prohibitive favorite right now at plus 270. I don't think he's the best value. The first question you have to ask yourself is, how many of these rookie quarterbacks, let's start with the rookie quarterback analysis, are likely to start week one of the 2021 season? And to me, Trevor Lawrence is almost 100%, unless he gets hurt, going to start week one of the NFL season. Also, I think Zach Wilson with the Jets, equally likely to start week one of the NFL season. So I think both of those guys need to be the favorites right now. Trevor Lawrence plus 270, Zach Wilson 7-1. There's a lot of optimism from Bears fans, and I understand it because you've been dealing with bad quarterback play for a long time. Justin Fields is the second most likely player to win Rookie of the Year. Here's the issue. I think Andy Dalton's going to start week one for the Chicago Bears. That's not an indictment of Justin Fields at all. To me, it's just way easier to start the veteran and transition to the rookie than it is to start the rookie, have him not play well, and maybe have to go back to the veteran. So I think that Andy Dalton is going to start for the Chicago Bears. I think that Cam Newton is going to start for the New England Patriots. And I also think that Jimmy G is going to start for the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the question within that larger context is, how long will those three guys be the starters? How long will it take Justin Fields to beat out Andy Dalton? How long will it take for Mac Jones to beat out Cam Newton? And how long will it take for Trey Lance to beat out Jimmy G? And so I'll give you my answer here within this construct of NFL Rookie of the Year odds. I believe if you actually look at the larger landscape, I think Jimmy G's actually likely, if he stays healthy, which has obviously been the biggest issue that he's faced, I think Jimmy G's likely to start for this entire year. I believe that the San Francisco 49ers and Kyle Shanahan are going to use Trey Lance a little bit like Patrick Mahomes was used by the Kansas City Chiefs. a guy who is able to come in, learn under a veteran like we saw Patrick Mahomes do with Alex Smith, team that's good enough to make the playoffs, and then after that year, you can move on from them. So I think Trey Lance is the least likely player, assuming Jimmy Garoppolo stays healthy, to actually take the field for the San Francisco 49ers among the top five picks. What about Justin Fields versus Andy Dalton and Cam Newton versus Mac Jones? To me, those are the two most intriguing battles here. Because Mac Jones has nothing in common with Cam Newton. Cam was one of the worst quarterbacks throwing the football last year. He ran it decently. But we talked, some of you may have seen this yesterday on Fox Bet Live. We talked about this. I mean, the numbers that were out there for Cam Newton were downright embarrassing in the offensive passing game. Let me hit you with them because I was like, man, this is a rough situation for Cam Newton. Last year, Cam averaged 177.1 yards per game. That was last in the NFL for quarterbacks with a minimum of 10 starts. He had only 8 passing touchdowns, last in the NFL for a quarterback with a minimum of 10 starts. And his passer rating was 22nd overall. Now, to be fair to Cam, he got COVID. The Patriots had absolutely no offensive receiving weapons. They've since gone out and added Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, which I think are going to be the quarterback's best friend. They'll be underneath. They'll be open a lot. That should be a throw that Cam can make. But how long is it going to take for Mac Jones to really start to challenge Cam Newton? And how will Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels adjust the offense? Because they're never going to want Mac Jones to ever run. And they're going to want Cam to continue to use his athleticism a lot. So I can see if Cam is willing to do it, and I don't know the answer about whether or not he's willing to do it, I can see a situation where Cam starts to be used somewhat as a weapon down near the goal line. The guy can score pretty much in first and goal situations every time. And Mac Jones starts to get worked in. So if I were setting an over-under right now for how many games it will take Mac Jones to end up the starter in New England, I would set it right around 8. Because I think about halfway through the season, competitive AFC East, the Bills should be good, the Dolphins should be good, and I think the Jets will be improved. They won't be any good, but they'll be improved. They couldn't be much worse. I think that Bill Belichick's going to look around, they're going to be 4-4, and he's going to see better options with Mac Jones. So I think 8 games there. I don't think that Trey Lance ever starts as long as Jimmy G is healthy. I think that Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence are starting every game beginning with week 1. What about Justin Fields? Similarly interesting. Because Andy Dalton, QB1, the Red Rifle, is right now locked in as the Chicago Bears guy. But Justin Fields being 5-1 to win Rookie of the Year tells you that there are a lot of people out there who believe that Justin Fields is going to start sooner rather than later. So how many weeks does it take Andy Dalton to be replaced as the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears? I think the answer is 4. I think Andy Dalton starts the first month of the season. I think the Chicago Bears are 2-2. I think they're coming off of a rough loss. We don't even know what their schedule is, but that's kind of what the Bears are. They're a 500 team. I think they'll be 2-2 after 4. And I think by week 5, Justin Fields will be the official starter. So with those predictions, how would you look at the larger NFL Rookie of the Year race? Well, to me, that would mean that Zach Wilson is the best value play here at 7-1 because I have him starting the earliest possible part of the season. Trey Lance is 9-1. I think there's no value. Again, you can go bet these at fanduel.com/clay. Mac Jones plus 950, but I don't think he's going to come in until around the midpoint of the season. So I think the value is on Zach Wilson. If you think Justin Fields is going to come in and be phenomenal, there might be some value on him at 5-1. This is going to be incredibly interesting to watch. And by the way, if you're curious, non-quarterbacks, the quarterbacks are the first 5 most likely to win the offensive rookie of the year. Kyle Pitts, who I think is going to kill it for the Falcons. Ja'Marr Chase, I think he's similarly going to kill it. In fact, if you told me Joe Burrow was going to stay healthy, I would put some money on Ja'Marr Chase at 15-1 to win rookie of the year. I think there's great value on him right there. And then you've got Travis Etienne, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, and Jaylen Waddle all at 17-1 or less, and then there's a big drop-off. So that is an interesting debate. How long until all five of these guys, the first-round draft picks, are all on the field? I think it'll be next year until all five of them start, because I don't think Trey Lance is going to start at all this year. Up next, Shannon Spake will join us. She joins us every single week. She is fantastic. We'll break down everything in the NFL draft and more with her. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Have you got vacations planned at all, Shannon? By the way, Shannon Spake joins us now, as she often does on Wednesdays on this program, getting ready for NASCAR, reacting to the NFL draft. But first, have you planned any vacations for you and your twins?
Well, no vacations until we get done with NASCAR, which is the end of June. And then all of my vacations this year are based around Ironman events.
Yes.
I did a 63-mile bike ride this past Saturday. And I can't even explain to you how nice it was to get like a race bib and be around other human beings that weren't wearing masks.
What does it feel like to do a 63-mile bike ride the day after?
It felt really good. But I'm like a masochist when it comes to like that kind of stuff. Like, I love doing all those physical things. I had to work the next day. My legs were a little tired. I was a little tired, but overall I felt great because I got through it, and it's all sort of like pushing my body and pushing my mental. The hardest part for that 63-mile bike ride for me, honestly, was just like the mental part of it, because you get like 4 hours into being on a bike and you start to like get bored. You know, you're like, I still have 10 miles left. And as you train for these Ironmans and these long endurance events, you're really sort of training your brain to be focused and doing one activity for that long of a time. So, but it was great. It was great to have people and it felt so weird and amazing at the same time.
When was the last time that you did a sporting event like that? Would it have been February, like March of 20? Like, when was the last time you did an Ironman event that felt somewhat normal?
Well, I did Traverse City, which is in the Michigan in the Upper Peninsula. I did that at the end of July of 2019, and that was the last one.
Traverse City is phenomenal. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It was so amazing. Best swim ever. We were in like the Grand Traverse Bay. You could see straight to the bottom. It was awesome. The community was amazing. And then everything shut down. I've done a ton of virtual races, but nothing. This is the first time that I was with other people on a bike course, you know, kind of preparing for a race and starting off with everybody. And it was pretty awesome.
NFL draft, obviously, we're still kind of unpacking things. But let's
Start. Are we still waiting on the first pick, by the way?
Yeah.
Actually picked Trevor?
Yeah, I know it was not a rapid start to the NFL draft. but let's start with Aaron Rodgers. Whose side do you find yourself on if forced to choose, Aaron Rodgers or the Packers, in what feels like it's going to be a fairly substantial standoff?
That's a really hard question. I haven't really thought about it, but I find myself leaning towards Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I do feel like he was sort of like we followed along with the storyline when Jordan Love was drafted. We know that it hasn't always been, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows there for him for many years, and they're not giving him support in the drafts like he wants.
Yes.
I got to side with Aaron Rodgers. I was actually, Todd Furman and I were having this conversation. He was on Race Hub last week. And before we did anytime Todd Furman and I are getting ready to do our little hit, most of the times we pre-tape it. We sit there and talk for like 15 minutes. And my producer's like, all right, we got to go.
He's a good dude.
We're covering like everything, but we did sort of talk about Aaron Rodgers. And I think he might have brought up like, hey, do you see a scenario where he might just say, I'm done? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I could see him doing that. I wouldn't put it past him to say, all right, I'm done. And then where are the Green Bay Packers? I think it's a really interesting scenario. But then at the same time, this could all be smoke and mirrors, right? I mean, he could be putting on like this whole, like, you just don't know with Aaron Rodgers. He's so mysterious in the things that he does and the motivation behind some of his stuff. But I think it's going to be a huge story. It's like June, right? That's when we'll find out, like June 1st, 2nd, 3rd. Is that when we might start to find out?
I think it's going to likely be after the first of the year after the first of the league year, however they classify it, June 1st, where you start to have different financial ramifications. I think he's going to end up in Denver. But I do think you're right. Like, he is in a unique spot. He's already a first ballot NFL Hall of Famer. He's already won a Super Bowl. He's made more money than he can ever spend.
Yeah.
I understand that at 37, 38 years old, he's unlikely to sit out and then come back. So that might be the trump card that the Packers have. But I think when they made the decision to draft Jordan Love, they had a fundamental miscalculation there that Aaron Rodgers was on the back end of his career. And I do think that spurred him to having maybe the best season of his career. And I don't know that that rift is able to be repaired at this point in time.
I also think if you, and this is probably getting a little too deep, but, you know, he doesn't talk to his family. The breakup with Danica was so sudden, and he was all of a sudden now engaged to somebody else. I don't know if he necessarily holds some of those, like, emotional ties to certain things that he might feel like, you know, I just feel like I need to stay here because this is where my home is, you know? So I do think that he easily cuts things off, and I think that he could do that easily. I like Denver, too. I know Mark Schiller tweeted that out right before the draft happened. I think he tweeted that he heard it's like pretty much a done deal. I like that scenario, and I know I listened to the show yesterday where you said that their odds to win the Super Bowl have increased, what'd you say, 60-1 to 20-1?
That's right.
Pretty stout.
Yeah, that is pretty stout, and I'm curious what you think about this. When guys get to be a certain age and they're still single, you mentioned it, so it's got me kind of thinking about it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I know both of Aaron Rodgers' I don't know Aaron Rodgers at all, but I know Jordan and I know Luke, both really good dudes. They've lived substantial years in Nashville, and I got to know them. Jordan obviously played quarterback at Vanderbilt for football, and his brother Luke still lives here. Seems to be just a really good dude. I mean, in other words, they are a quintessentially, it seems to me, fairly normal family. So the idea that Aaron Rodgers would cut off his parents and his brothers, not be married, not have his own kids, there aren't a lot of examples like that in athletics, right? Like most athletes, by the time they would get to be 37, 38 years old, they may be divorced, but most of them would have kids. Most of them would have some sort of support structure. And I think that makes Aaron Rodgers sort of a unique individual in that respect, in terms of the way that he's living his life. I mean, there aren't that many totally single 37 and 38-year-old guys, period. But to have a job that's that much of a central focus, you compare him, let's say, to Tom Brady, who talks a lot about Giselle and all the kids that he has. I guess Peyton Manning didn't really have a lot of kids till he was near the end of his career. But I do think that factors in maybe with the psychology of how he responds to a story like this, because his profession is kind of the essence of what he represents. He doesn't have a family that he's focused on, maybe like a lot of people are out there when it comes to work-life balance, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it now that you kind of put it that way. And I'm trying to, like, as you're sort of talking, I'm trying to run down in my brain, like, a list of some athletes that are his age, you know, that aren't married, that don't have all of these things. Tony Stewart is one person in sort of my world in NASCAR. He's now engaged, but he's late 40s and not married. He's been engaged a couple of times. The only thing I can say, and obviously I don't know anything about his personal life, is just it takes a different type of person to actually be involved with an athlete. And, you know, maybe athletes who don't get married say, well, there's no way that I can fully commit to both things, right?
Yes.
I am all in.
I get
on
that.
This.
And that would be a Derek Jeter type decision, right?
Yep.
If I remember correctly, Derek Jeter never got married until basically he was done playing baseball. And
yeah,
I think the idea was, I got to be focused on my excellence and I don't want the distraction of a serious relationship or a family.
Well, I see it a lot, you know, in racing and I mean, even in other sports, right? The number one thing in a lot of these drivers' lives is that car. That's number one, right? Get that car to go fast, win on Sunday. And if you're married to a man or a woman who's in sports, you have to understand that their primary, that's their love. That's their first love is what they do. And it does take a unique balance. So that's the only thing that I can kind of think, but it is a unique situation. Tony Stewart's one guy I can kind of think of in the NASCAR world.
Okay, let's go to the NFL draft itself. Did you watch very much on Thursday, Friday, Saturday? I know you talked about covering the NFL draft. I think it was a few years ago, or the NBA draft, sorry.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my kids are addicted to it, my two oldest anyway. The draft itself has become one of the biggest sporting events in the entire country. I was talking about this on the show. I'd probably draft NFL first if I could only talk one sport on the show. College football second, and then the NFL draft third, and there'd be a big drop-off after that. Did you get caught up in all the excitement of a somewhat normal draft? I loved, Shannon, you know, having done a lot of live stand-ups over the years, having fans standing behind the analysts yelling, screaming with signs, sort of supporting their teams. I thought it looked and felt great to be back there with the environment that Cleveland created.
Yeah, all I could think about when I tweeted this out was like 1 year ago, I was hoarding toilet paper, and now I'm sitting here watching like the NFL draft with human beings there. And yeah, it was awesome. I wasn't thrilled the fact that it took 27 minutes to make the first pick, because 8 o'clock and then 8:30, you know, it's getting late, right? Let's move on. We all knew who was going first overall. I loved like Zach Wilson's, like his mom was like fixing his tie or something.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Jacket. You almost thought she was going to like lick her finger and like wipe his face before he walked out there, like the moms do. Like, I just was like, oh my God, have fun in New York. I watched through Denver, and I watched through Denver because I wanted to see Miami. I wanted to see Carolina. And then I was interested to see if anything did happen with Aaron Rodgers with Denver, with the Denver pick. And then I shut it down, but I did watch the first. I love like Jalen, like Waddle, like he's going to Miami. He's walking. I mean, just, it was really cool to see. I sometimes kind of go back and forth with like us putting these young kids in these like enormous spotlight and putting so much on them before they've sort of made the move to the NFL. But it was fun to watch.
Let's go to NASCAR. We had Talladega, then we had, I can't even remember where the race was last week. Where are we headed this week?
Kansas.
What's your pick? Okay, so we're in Kansas. You were right 2 weeks ago. You were not right this past week, but I mean, you're not a savant. How would you assess this?
Okay, so Darlington is this weekend, and it's a lot of fun. I'm surprised that you guys aren't doing anything on the show, because we've sort of recruited the entire FS1 family to do these throwbacks. Are you guys dressing up?
Yeah. What are you wearing in your like, it's sports-connected throwbacks, right, on that Friday, I think, is the plan?
So we are not doing sports. So Darlington, they're doing – Darlington's one of the oldest tracks on the circuit. It's one of the toughest. They call it the track too tough to tame. You get Darlington stripes down the side of the car because the guys just hit the wall all the time. And a couple of years ago, NASCAR decided to do sort of this theme around Darlington weekend, and we do throwback weekend. So we dress up like actually from like 70s. I think they're doing like 90s theme on Friday for the Xfinity race, which I'm good. They were talking grunge. I don't know about like grunge, but I was like raving in the 90s. So I think I'll have to pull out my pacifiers and my like glow sticks for my 90s throwback. But we're doing some fun stuff. I think I'm going to do like a Farrah Fawcett wig on set on Sunday for the pre-race show. And that's why we've got all the FS1 folks. But I think they're having you guys do the sports aspect of the throwback, so they don't have to get you guys dressed up like, I don't know, like the Love Boat or anything like that.
Yeah, my understanding is we are dressed up in the context of 80s era stars in sports. And
got
so
it.
In particular, they wanted us in jerseys. And so I'm pretty excited about the, like, I'm not a jersey guy. Anybody who listens to this show knows. In fact, my rule on jerseys in general is you can only wear the jersey if somebody is younger, like you were younger than them, right? I think it looks weird for a grown man to be wearing like a 20-year-old's jersey. You know, if you're 55 and you're wearing a 20-year-old's jersey, I think that looks weird. But I have the old school Kansas City Royals baby blue Bo Jackson jersey from back in the day. And those are awesome uniforms for people out there who remember, you know, like basically what Bo Jackson was wearing in his rookie cards back in 1987. I had all those Bo Jackson rookie cards, the future stars. And in fact, I may talk a little bit about that on the show. I mean, that's one of my, Bo Jackson is one of my all-time favorite athletes as a kid, obviously for both football and baseball. And if I could pick one guy to have good health, I think Bo Jackson would be the answer, because it's just brutal the way that his career came to a shortened close because of that tackle in the Raiders game. I think it was against the Bengals. And what he would have been capable of still in both baseball and football was off the charts. So that is what I'm wearing to get ready for the throwback weekend. We're wearing those on Friday.
I love that. That's really cool. It's a cool story. Do you make any money off of your baseball cards and your
you know what?
Cards?
I still have a lot of them, and they have become wildly popular. The baseball cards have, and I've shown them to my 10-year-old, who's the one that's the most into kind of cards now. But no, I haven't sold any of them or done anything.
Are they
with
worth
them.
Any? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think my cards are worth like tens of thousands of dollars now.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I kept a lot of them. I mean, and the card market has just been wildly
really
hot. Yeah. So now I don't know if these prices are going to hold out, but I think guys who were stuck at home and are in their 30s and 40s maybe have a little bit of disposable income now, and they're like going back in time nostalgia-wise, and they couldn't afford to buy, let's say, a Michael Jordan rookie card, that Fleer card, 86, 87, back when they were kids. And now they've got the money and they're sitting around at home and they got stimulus checks and, you know, you haven't been able to go out to dinner or go on vacations. And it's like, I mean, this is just
you're not working, you gotta spend it somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you see the Bears fans when they picked Justin Fields? By
oh, yeah,
the way?
They're like, ready. They're ready. They believe men. Justin Fields is going to – I mean, they were crying, basically. I mean, if you've been going as a Bears fan as long as they have with Jim McMahon memories, I can see totally why – they felt like they needed to exult as they did.
So my dad and my stepmom are Chicago, I mean, like Bears, Cubs, everything, right? And so Super Bowl shuffle time, who wasn't? I took a hiatus from the Miami Dolphins, and I was all in on the Chicago Bears.
They were such an iconic team.
Oh, my God. Walter Payton was – I met him one time at a Chicago auto show. I raised my hand. He was on the platform, sort of like, you know, the stage, talking to everybody. I raised my hand to ask a question and asked if I could get my picture taken with him, and he pulled me up on stage, and I got my picture taken with Walter Payton. And, like, Jim McMahon, like the funky QB, I could still recite the Super Bowl shuffle probably from start to finish. I met Jim McMahon at a golf tournament one time, and I told him that I had been watching him since I was like a little girl, and he's like, "You certainly have grown up, haven't you?" And I was like, "No."
That's a perfect Jim McMahon line. That is a perfect Jim McMahon line. Yeah, they had so many iconic. I mean, like, they had, for people who remember, they made a refrigerator Perry G.I. Joe that, if I remember correctly, when I was a kid, you could send in, I think you had to get it out of like a cereal box or something. I don't think they do that anymore, but there used to be giveaways where they would be like something you could mail in and I feel like it was a cereal box or there was some form or fashion that you had to send something in order to get back your refrigerator Perry G.I. Joe. But I was like in that age where I'm playing with G.I. Joes now. Yeah. And but you think about refrigerator Perry was in there.
Ron Rivera, Dan Hampton.
Mike Singletary. There were just so many iconic guys. And some guys like Jeff Fisher, for instance, who ends up a coach in the NFL, that wasn't necessarily a massively integral part of the 85 Bears in terms of a name that you think of back then. But then goes on to become a head coach. I mean, and just even Mike Ditka. I mean, that's one of the most beloved teams that I can remember in NFL history.
I will tell you, and it's never lost on me what I do for a living and the opportunities that I get. And I am the first one to fangirl out. And probably, as I've gotten older and deeper into my career, I allow myself to do stuff. When I met Jason Taylor and I interviewed him, the day that he was getting his Hall of Fame ring, I told him, like, hey, I used to sit right up there and watch you play. I waited on you at Outback Steakhouse one time, Jason. Like, I was totally like, this is a full circle moment. When I walked out onto the field at Soldier Field and got to work a game down there, it was like if little Shannon could see you now kind of moment. And and it was really, really special.
That is fantastic. Shannon Spake, we will talk to you hopefully again when? Maybe next Wednesday. Break everything down for you. Thank you for hanging out with us. What was your
Denny
pick?
Hamlin.
Yes.
I'm going Denny Hamlin this weekend at Darlington. He's been so close so many times. He won there last year. And remember, Darlington was where we restarted last year after the pandemic.
Oh, that's
and
right.
We're actually
and then went down to Florida, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have fans in the stands. NASCAR's letting people back into the media, like the infield area, so people that work in sports, so they're slowly starting to loosen up some of those restrictions. So it's really a full circle weekend. But Denny Hamlin's my pick this weekend. I think he's going to finally break through and get that first victory of the
Denny
season.
Denny Hamlin is the pick of Shannon Spake. Good. I've written that down. I will get that bet in. FanDuel.com/Clay. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's Ben, host of the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is the Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
So waiting to see exactly what happens with the weather, but I talked about this a little bit off the top, that I am scheduled to get to play with John Daly as part of the Pro-Am down here in Birmingham, and it's been kind of a crazy back and forth throughout this process, as you can imagine. They didn't do the Pro-Am last year, but Dub, you are a huge golf fan. What are your anticipations of what playing around with John Daly would be like?
Man, you know, everyone has the conversations, at least golfers do. You know, what would your dream foursome be? And John Daly is a popular answer to that question. If you got to play with yourself and three other people, I'd say half the people that have that conversation, John Daly is one of those three other names. So I think that's a really cool opportunity you're about to get to have to play with John Daly. And have you seen a picture of Daly lately? He's rocking this just massive yellow beard lately. I'm curious to see if he's still got that.
It's going to be crazy. I mean, the weather down in Birmingham, I'm hopeful that it's going to hold off. We're at the event down here, and I'm basically finishing the show and then would be, you know, stepping out to go play, and then I've got to be down there, and so I'll miss the show tomorrow on Thursday. But it has the potential to be pretty fantastic. And it's also kind of a nostalgic event, which ties in with what we were just talking about with Shannon Spake, because on Friday on Outkick, we are scheduled to have a sort of throwback show. And they asked us, hey, what jersey do you want to put on, right? Like, what jersey would make the most sense from the 1980s, from when I was a kid? And it's an interesting question. And so I sat around for a while before it immediately kind of light bulb moment. I don't know if I'm unique in this, but when I think about sports, I can picture what the baseball cards looked like for the years when I was a kid that was a hardcore sports fan. And let me explain what I mean by that. Like, I can think about particular almost snapshots in my mind of really popular baseball cards when I was about the age of, I don't know, 7 to about 12. Every year, what the baseball card set looked like was so massive. Like, I remember, for instance, this is just off the top of my head, so if I'm wrong, you guys can correct me, but 1986 was a relatively boring sort of Topps color. It had, like, the black up at the top where the team's name was inside of it. But 1987 for Topps was really wacky. They went with a wood panel background. So, like, Bo Jackson's rookie card in 1987, if I remember correctly, said Future Stars. See if I'm right about this, Dub. And he was wearing that baby blue Kansas City Royals jersey. And there's, like, this wood panel around him. And then, you know, I'm thinking about, like, Jose Canseco. They had the rated rookie, they would say, on Donruss. And, like, Jose Canseco had a ridiculous mustache, and he was in the dugout. And I remember how wildly popular that card was. And then there started to be a lot of new ones. Like, the Upper Deck, probably the most iconic baseball card of my youth, is Ken Griffey Jr., the number one card in the very first set that Upper Deck ever did in 1989. And Upper Deck sort of revolutionized the baseball card business. I remember the Frank Thomas rookie, if I remember correctly, the one that was the most valuable. He was on his knee, trying to make a tag. And so I start to think through, and then of course there's all the basketball and football cards, which were nowhere near as popular as the baseball cards. So when they told us, hey, we're doing a throwback, and we want you to think about what your situation is going to be. And by the way, let me rethink on the Bo Jackson. There were multiple ones. The blue Fleer Bo Jackson, he was wearing his, if I remember correctly, this is, you know, 30 years ago, he was wearing his blue iconic Kansas City Royals jersey, and it was like a baby blue background for Fleer. I believe that was his rookie card with Fleer. for Major League Baseball, it was 19 for Tops, which was kind of the top of the baseball market at that point. There was Fleer, Donruss, and Tops. For Major League Baseball 1987, I believe Bo Jackson was in the outfield, and they had kind of a multicolored bottom right corner future stars card that was out there for Bo Jackson. All right, Dub, you are looking these up. Am I remembering these cards correctly? Can you look up the images?
Yeah, the Fleer. I've been basically scrolling through Bo Jackson baseball cards for the past couple of minutes here. Some of these are just absolutely awesome. The
yes.
Fleer one, you're right. He's got the baby blue Royals jersey,
and it's like a profile shot, right?
Exactly.
Like chest up.
Exactly
yep.
right. With the number 16 Royals. I mean, there's a ton of these cards out here. There's some. I mean, these are just fantastic.
I have no idea what these cards are worth, by the way. But these were, when I was a kid, Bo Jackson. You know, I had the Bo Jackson poster on my wall where he's got. It was one of the greatest, I think, sports photos that's ever been taken. I had Jordan dunking from the free throw line, even though he took off from one step inside, like I imagine a lot of you did. And then I had Bo Jackson with the football pads and then also the baseball bat, like on the back of his shoulders. Which I think also became a limited edition baseball card, but it was just absolutely one of the most iconic photos that's ever been taken, I think, of an athlete. And then I'm looking right now, you just texted me, yep, that's exactly it, the future stars. I wasn't 100% right, but it's Bo Jackson in the outfield preparing, it looks like, to catch a fly ball, and the future stars is multicolored in that crazy wood panel. I'm not sure anything is more 1987 than the idea of, hey, let's just make the baseball cards all look like they're wood paneled in that 1987 set. Did you have any recollection of these baseball cards at all? Because you went to Auburn, and Bo Jackson is an icon there.
Well, the picture you mentioned with the football shoulder pads with the baseball bat kind of draped over his shoulders behind
yes.
his neck. I mean, half of my friends had that exact poster in
yeah.
their apartment or dorm room or whatever. I mean,
that's
that
still,
is
by
just
the way, kind of a cool poster to have even today. And by the way, I'm still a big Bo Jackson fan. In my home studio, some of you watch videos and see, I have an autographed Bo Jackson picture, which is him spiking the football with his image from the original Tecmo Bowl. For those of you out there that are video game fans, Bo Jackson's one of the greatest video game athletes of all time. And so I have an authentically signed Bo Jackson spiking the football in Tecmo Bowl style that's on the wall here. So I still have Bo Jackson up on my wall, even years and years later.
Well, he's a living legend. I remember ESPN a handful of years ago did the Greatest Athletes of All Time series, and he ended up being number one, greatest athlete ever. So
yeah, I mean
he's
I think you could make that argument. By the way, speaking of Auburn legends, Charles Barkley also participating in this pro-am that I am scheduled to participate in later today down in Birmingham.
Bring your helmet.
So, yeah, well, he's not in my group. So, but it's a good point that I don't know what time exactly he tees off. It's a fun group. Nick Saban's playing, Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, Kirby Smart. Some of you may listen, and I played with these guys a couple of years ago. That's definitely a good advice to keep my head on a swivel when Barkley's hitting the ball. And also for anybody who's in the crowd, by the way. I'm nervous anytime these pro-ams, I've played in a few of them over the years, but when they announce your name and you step up to be ready to tee off, that's really the shot that I care about, like, infinitely more, right? You don't want to whiff. You don't want to hit like a screaming line drive directly into the gallery right after they say your name. So I'm hoping. I know Eddie George well. We've played golf several times before. He's a part of the group as well, the new former Tennessee Titan legend, Ohio State legend, but also Tennessee State football coach. So he's a part of our group as well. And I kind of hope, like a couple of years ago when I did this, Kirby Smart, Georgia football coach, hit an awful tee shot. And I was like, okay. You know, like, you don't want everybody to just hit like a, you know, perfect right down the middle shot, and then you come up and just dribble one, you know, 15 yards off to the left or the right. But if somebody else hits a bad one, it makes you get a little bit less nervous. At least that's my hope.
Yeah, it'll certainly lighten the load if someone in front of you kind of shanks one off to the right. So it'll take the pressure off for sure.
There's no doubt at all about that. All right. When we come back, we'll dive into all of the world of sports in particular. What do you think? The continuing Aaron Rodgers drama. We're also scheduled to be joined, by the way, by Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee and more. Will Kane scheduled to join us in the third hour of the program. This is an absolute loaded show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us on Fox Sports Radio.